take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your outer drive of music news and critical opinion. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. This week, a special edition of Popcast in which we focus on lyrics. Not the music, just the words. Our guest is the singer and writer of some of the finer lyrics recorded in 2015, Joe Casey from the Detroit band Proto Martyr. Joe Casey stopped by the Popcast studio earlier this year when Proto Martyr was on tour supporting its new record, The Agent Intellect. Hope you enjoy it. I have here in the studio with us Joe Casey, the singer of Proto Martyr, and he's here to talk about lyrics. You just heard a bit of the song Dope Cloud from Proto Martyr's new record, Agent Intellect, which is an excellent record.
Thank you.
And one that it's troublesome.
Okay.
It's like a series of warnings.
All right.
It makes me feel kind of funny inside.
Okay. I don't know if that was what we were going for, but I'll take it.
It puts me on edge little bit, as does mostly everything I know by Proto Martyr. But there's something, more and more people are talking about you as a lyricist, and that's what we're here to talk about today. You have a sort of offhanded way of using your voice, and some people have described it as a mumble and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, when you get drawn into what Proto Martyr does, you're going to want to look at Joe Casey's lyrics. And then when you see them on paper, you say, aha, something is going on here. Let's talk about the song that you selected for us to talk about, a song not by you that made an impression on you somehow as a writer of lyrics. Mm-hmm. I threw this question open to you, and you came back with a song by Tyvek, another band from Detroit.
Correct.
And the song is Still Sleep. First of all, tell me about the relationship between you and Tyvek.
I know all the guys in the band. I went to high school with some of them. I went to summer camp with the original drummer. And so I felt like I was the guy that kind of brought them together because I was the one that knew the guy from summer camp and the guy from high school. The leader of that band is Kevin Boyer, who's a couple years younger than me, but we went to the same high school. And he was in your typical punk bands in high school, called like Los Pinkos was the name of the band. And he was just really the music nerd, the music fan, you know, that I knew. So I'd go to him for advice about music and things like that.
Yeah.
And so when they started Tyvek, I had no musical ability, but I really liked the band and would just go to all their shows. And they would let me go on tour with them sometimes, supposedly as a roadie, but I didn't really carry much equipment.
This is like mid-aughts.
Yeah, like 2004 on. And besides the band being really great, what I really like is Kevin's ability writing lyrics. And I would say that I probably steal and borrow from him the most as far as other lyricists.
Well, let's give people a sense of this song, Still Sleep by the Detroit band Tyvek. Wasted. Run it back a little bit. A few weeks now, as I remember it, you learn to ignore everything intuitive. And what's priceless from a little syndicate? Elect the president, criticize the leaders if I say I don't.
Some of those lyrics are hard to hear. Right.
And they're not also easily available on the internet. Mm-hmm. When you suggested this song to me, I searched for the lyrics. I couldn't find them. The song is an early single, right? It was on an early single.
It was an early single, and it was on their first like CDR, and then later a record of like their early recordings called Fast Metabolism.
Right. Mm-hmm. Why don't you read maybe the first stanza there?
Okay. What's wasted? Run it back a little bit. A few weeks now, as I remember it, if you learn to ignore everything intuitive. I believe it's what he's saying. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I get out of it.
All right, and I'll read the second one. What's priceless? Form a little syndicate. Elect a president. Criticize the readers.
I think it might be leaders in that one.
Criticize the leaders.
Yeah.
That would make more sense.
Yeah.
If I say I don't care, I don't care. It isn't deference.
Right.
Did you know from the start, when Kevin Boyer got involved with Tyvek, did you know from the start, here's somebody with an original way of writing lyrics? Or was he just sort of a singer, you know, trying to fit in with this band?
I remember, like, the Los Pinkos songs, some of them, like, other guys in the band would write songs, and they would write very, like, oh, this is going to sound like The Clash, and they'd write lyrics that were very similar to The Clash.
Right.
And Kevin, they're basic punk songs, but he'd throw in like a little word or something, even back then, where you're like, okay, he's thinking about this a little bit more than your average punk guy.
Yeah.
And then so when Tyvek came along, in Detroit, there's just a lot of like garage rock kind of left over, where those lyrics are always very just like party time, have a good time.
Right.
And he was writing these kind of weird ones like this. This is an early one where it's just kind of like, okay, this is completely different than what's going on in Detroit at the time.
So you felt that he was kind of like subverting that party time thing.
Sure.
Or that even like meta party time thing.
Exactly.
Wherever it's at now.
Right.
What did you learn from him? Let's say specifically from this song.
From this song.
Yeah, I mean, if you can seize on certain things that he does in this song.
Well, right off the bat, the fact that the song is called Still Sleep, and he does not say still sleep in the song. He says, I'm still asleep.
I'm still asleep.
Right.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, he's changing it.
Yeah.
Where the title is different. And so you kind of think, okay, well, still sleep. And then at the end of the song, it's, you know, much calmer. It kind of reaches a point where it's calm. And so the title could apply then because he gets kind of wistful at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I see your face in my dream. It's kind of like romantic. But throughout the whole song, he's not really talking about love or somebody in particular.
Yeah.
It's almost like drifting into sleep. The music and the words, to me, like work really well together.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like going through, you know, in the middle, it gets really loud and hard to understand, and he's kind of railing against hospitals or something. And then he kind of goes back to sleep. You know?
What about different kinds of, I guess you'd call it diction, mm-hmm. that he uses? Different sort of classes of words?
Sure. I take that a lot from him, and also there's other writers that I like that do it, where you take an old phrase that's still around.
Yeah.
People still kind of use it occasionally. But
common.
But, you know, like using when he says, like, seek and ye shall find, you know, that's probably from the Bible or something. And so it's like, I like doing that. Like, you kind of take an old phrase, and if you put it among common jargon or something, it really stands out. You know, so I use that a lot too, right? We'll take like a biblical phrase or arcane phrase, but try to use it in things like talking about the dollar store and the liquor store. He says that right after talking about the storefront churches, and in Detroit, yeah, you know, there's blocks and blocks of just liquor stores, storefront churches, and like wig boutiques, and you know, so it's kind of like that part I like because it's actually it feels like driving around Detroit in that middle part where he drives around the block again. He's looking for something. Who knows what he's looking for in this? I don't know, but you get the sense of driving around Detroit in the middle of the song.
What is it about Detroit? I feel like there's no other city now at this moment whose rock bands talk about hometown details so much. Maybe in the past that might have been true in L.A., New York, but Detroit is where you see that a lot more now.
Right. I think it's just because lately there's been a lot of change going on there, and we read what other people say that aren't from Detroit about it. It's kind of almost a response to that, I think. That's what I kind of do. You know, somebody will write an article about how to save Detroit, or somebody opening up like a fancy bread store in Detroit, how that's going to save Detroit. And you're kind of responding to that, you know, the perception of Detroit as opposed to what I think is the reality. But, you know, everybody has their own take on it.
It's a reaction
right.
against other people
right.
looking at Detroit and coming to conclusions about it,
right.
mythologizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit has meaning.
Right.
Detroit is mythical.
Exactly.
You know, but it sounds like you're saying some of that is manufactured.
Yeah. Well, like especially with Tyvek, like on the first couple records, Kevin kind of talked about like the desolation that's there and the kind of fear that goes with living there. But then by like their last record, he was more commenting on the fact that it's getting gentrified and things are changing. And so it's kind of like a dialogue of what is happening in Detroit. And Tyvek talks about lots of other things, but I kind of see that as a through line through their records. And I don't solely talk about Detroit, but it comes up, you know, in the lyrics just because I want a sense of place and I'm from Detroit. So
that's true. No, you don't only talk about
right.
Detroit, for sure. You do reference it a lot.
Right.
And also there's this sense of mapping in your songs. Like, mm-hmm. well, you just mentioned that in this song by Tyvek, it almost feels like you're driving around.
Right. He drives around the block. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get that from your lyrics too.
Right.
Not only naming place names, mm-hmm. not only naming roads
right.
and exits, but sort of psychological mapping
exactly.
of Detroit. So the answer to that, why you do that, is still a reaction to other people?
Well, no, it's more like
theorizing about your hometown.
I like music that is where you can tell where this person is from or where they're specific. Like I like specifics in songs. Even if I don't understand them, it makes like a better connection for me to the music. So yeah, like the very specific things is more just, especially in Detroit, you're driving around everywhere. I think that's why there's like a lot of driving songs and that becomes part of your world. Like
sure.
you know, just driving here and there and, you know, seeing the sights sort of, and that kind of gets locked in it, you know, and Tyvek does it a lot and I do it a lot too.
You know, if you think back to like the reason people wrote stories or wrote poems or songs in the first place, you
right.
know, way back might have been to say, we were here, we existed, this place existed for posterity, you know, as a record. Do you feel any sense of that?
I myself, I'm pretty shy, but then I still am a singer in a band and I write and I really think I work on the lyrics a lot. And so there is a part of me that's like, I need to get this down and I need to kind of record what's going on or how I'm feeling. And that's kind of a selfish thing where you're like, you know, what I'm feeling is important. I have to put it in a song, you know, but you do feel kind of like a peacock for doing it. But yeah, I do kind of want to, you know, record what I'm thinking and have to find it important, even if, you know.
I mean, in terms of why you do what you do, right. often people are attracted to the thing that they least
right.
want to do or the thing they least feel they can do.
Right. Yeah, that way, if you know, if I thought I was really, really good at it, I don't think I would want to do it, you know, if that makes any sense. The fact that I struggle with it is the kind of the fun of writing lyrics and singing and all that.
I read somewhere you saying that the way you write your lyrics is purely in response to, well, the songs are created sort of through jamming.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Working things out in rehearsal spaces, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Which might be somebody's basement. Where do you
it
guys?
Is. Yeah,
do you
it's guys... Scotty, our bass player's basement.
Right.
Right now, yeah. That's right.
There's lots of basements.
Yes.
In Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a riff or you get an idea and you start rolling it around and putting the pieces of a song together
mm-hmm.
and you try to figure out what your top line could be.
Right.
Which is how, you know, lots of songs are made.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't write anything beforehand.
No.
But then by the end of this process, you have a song whose lyrics look on the page pretty close to a poem. And that's not the case with a lot of songs that are made in a similar way. It's not the case with The Fall. There are a few songs probably that look pretty good on the page, but
right.
I'm bringing up The Fall because I've read that you admire them and
yep.
it would make sense that you do. But so where does the finessing come in?
Well, I just think as a band, what we do is we really edit a lot. Like most of the songs when we kind of come up, when I'm mumbling over them, trying to think what works, usually they're like 8, 9, 10 minutes long. You know, when we're in the jamming process, and
yeah.
then it just becomes cutting it down. So I might have ideas for, you know, 20, 30, you know, lots of lines. Like I write a lot. Like once I have like the mumbling recorded and I know, okay, that's what I kind of want it to sound like. Mm-hmm. So I come up with a lot more. And then as Greg and the band kind of narrow it down and narrow it down, I have to cut a bunch. And I kind of say, which one's more important in this? And I kind of have to move pieces around. And sometimes it's very upsetting to me because I'm like, oh, I really fall in love with a line or something. And then sometimes what I'll do is I'll kind of take that out and try to use it again later in another song or someplace else. You're right.
Yeah, writers never waste anything.
Exactly. So, but yeah, it's just a matter of just getting it down to as simple as I can. And now it's funny because after we've played so much, I'm always thinking like, is this something I want or am able to sing every night? Or is it too hard or is it too wordy? You know, so I'm kind of going for more simplistic things now than I would in the past. Because I realize I have to sing it every night, whereas before I'd have to sing it like once a month.
Right, so. Sure. So it sounds like you're not thinking about the book published by Alfred A. Knopf in 2035, The Collected Lyrics of Joe Casey.
No, I'm not. Although, but then again, part of me is like, okay, I want to have the lyrics with the record. I want, you know, it's a weird combination of wanting to be understood but not wanting to be understood at the same time, or at least not explaining everything, you know, like this lyric means this, this means that, that's a reference to this, you know, that sort of thing.
So you want that tension. You want to be understood, but you want not to be understood.
Exactly. And I don't know what that, I'm sure there's some German, there's a German word for it probably, but I don't know that feeling, but it's, I like it to be present for people to look at and so they can try to figure it out or if they want to, or they don't have to.
Do you think that you are more obscure in your lyric writing than Kevin Boyer?
No. I mean, well, Kevin writes a lot of different varieties of songs, I think. He can do like a really good rabble-rousing, you know, catchy punk song with, you know, I don't know. I think we both kind of have obscure moments, but who knows where his songwriting is going to go now. But I can be, I'm trying to be less obscure, I think. I think that's the goal. Maybe a little bit clearer on some songs.
Were you doing a lot of writing before you were part of a band?
Not at all. I went to school for English, and I wanted to be a writer, but I was one of those people that wants to be a writer and never like sat down and wrote and was thinking up ideas and, oh, I should write something down, but no, never. It was the band. That's one of the good things about being in a band is it spurs you to actually do something.
When you do get to the point of, you know, you've got a bunch of possible lyrics and you're going to finesse them into an actual set of workable ones, do you think about things that you read in the past? I mean, what do you think about? Do you think about other songs? Do you think about poems? Do you think about speeches?
It's a mishmash.
I keep bringing up poems. I'm sorry. I see that in your work.
I don't read poetry, not often. I have like maybe 3 or 4 poetry books in total.
What are they?
Collected poems of the 20th century or something like that. Like very, very limited. A guy just gave me a poetry book last night. So,
yeah.
You know, it's less poetry and more, there's a lot of TV in it. Like having TV on and hearing the way people talk and weird cadences and other people's songs, like definitely Tyvek I'm influenced by. I think it's trying to do poetry without knowing how to do poetry. But that was always, like in college, that was like one of my favorite classes was the poetry class. And I remember writing, is it a Sestina or something, and being really proud that I wrote that, you know. But once that was over, I never went back to writing poetry until now. So,
do other people come to you and say, hey, your work sounds like you've been reading a lot of
so-and-so.
Poet X.
Yeah. And
that does happen.
Sometimes, yeah. But I should look up who they're talking about. I don't know. This is an old folks party. This is an old folks party.
Welcome to Uncle Mother's. All right, so let's talk about one of your songs, Uncle Mothers, a song on your new record, The Agent and Elect. I'm just going to read the first lines. Is that okay?
That's fine.
It's painful for you, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. This is an old folks' party. Welcome to Uncle Mothers. Leave your children in the car. The procedure in the kitchen will remove your inmost light. All right? I'll go down a couple lines. Here, it's cold by law. Old folks' party, mind the decor, take care. Toward the end, welcome to Uncle Mother's. Are your children still in the car? The dog's there, they're singing. What they're singing is quite bizarre. The horizon opens up, and now what did I see? What's in the center there that's calling out? Calling out to me, and the things that have been apported look like organs all diseased. And the sun will never shine again. I've listened to that song many times, and, you know, because the opening line, the opening line is this is an old folks party, so I see old people. But then you you welcome the listener into a place.
Mm-hmm.
So the listener is inside a place,
right,
and imagining what that place looks like. What is that place?
It's kind of like your middle-aged friend's house where they're having like a dinner party. It's like not...
Is this a middle-aged friend who's still...
Well, no, it's like you're getting invited, over. Everyone's like, everyone's married, or you know, it's
okay.
It's a very that was the idea that I had originally, was that it's just a very mundane dinner party that people my age have now. You know, where it's no longer the raucous party. At least it doesn't start that way.
What is your age?
I'm 38. Yeah, so it's like people are, you know, they're. Now they have jobs, so it doesn't go late, and some of them have kids, and some people are married, and it's very kind of like boring party at the beginning.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about like their health problems and how they're getting old, and it just becomes this thing, you know. But because you still have that, you want to recreate the past, you know, it goes from being very cocktails and a nice meal to people want to try to recreate their youth, and so they, you know, start going in, you know. And I was also thinking about the idea of, like, I read somewhere about how people are having like plastic surgery parties or something, or Botox parties.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of thinking it'd be, especially now since people I know my age are starting to have like health problems and stuff, that you go to this party and they'll give you these pills or something for your, you know, be kind of like the original idea that I had was kind of a idea of a party kind of devolving.
What's the procedure in the kitchen that will remove your inmost light?
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I did, like, inmost light, I got that from some old English writer whose name I'm blanking on. He had a story called The Inmost Light, and it's a turn of the century thing where they're going to try to end up removing a soul accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the idea of things getting removed, I suppose, scientifically.
What you've just described is like totally the opposite of a rock and roll subject.
Right. And I should say, like, the interesting thing about this and the reason that I got to that point was the name of the song just came from Greg getting, our guitar player, getting a message, a call that was like a wrong number, and it was somebody like mumbling and sounded pretty drunk, and it sounded like we thought they said come to Uncle Mother's, or Uncle Mama's is what we thought.
Uh-huh.
And we just thought, and I was like, okay, that locked in my head, Uncle Mother, that's weird. And then Cold by Law was something Scotty said that he was thinking of a movie that we went to go see and we couldn't even remember the name. He's like, oh yeah, it was called Cold by Law. And so that stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so once they came up with the music, it's like, okay, I want a song to be called Uncle Mother's. That's a great name for a song. I want to say Cold by Law. That's a good thing to say because it has multiple meanings and it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's kind of like, okay, I got these two things. What can it be about? You know, what can I write that fits these two things?
You're finding scraps, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're sometimes unmoored from their context.
Right.
If you were a different kind of person, you might be saying to me, yeah, I just write about what I see.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of rock and roll lyricists might say.
I like fictionalizing things.
Yeah.
In coming out, I like the idea of writing a story. I like the idea that at the end of Uncle Mother's, where did the children go? You're in the house partying and your kids are still in the car through this whole song, and then I'm going to remind you that, you know, don't forget about your kids.
See, that's the kind of detail that unsettles me.
Right. Yeah, like, where do they go?
Why are they left in the car?
Reminds me, if you're just going into somebody's house and you leave the kids in the car. It seemed like when I was a kid, I was left in the car. Not that my parents were bad, but I just remember like that's like a big childhood memory of being like, okay, well, I'm going to go in and go grocery shop and you sit, you know, crack the windows and I'll be back, and just passing the time in the backseat of a car as a kid.
Being left in the car for hours while the parents go inside.
Yeah, that's some sort of weird drug party where their souls are being removed.
Things are being apported.
Right.
Yeah. That's different.
Yeah. And so I wanted it to kind of be science fiction-y, but then it's also just about the horizon looking forward is, you know, more sickness and more decay as you get older. So it's kind of like that thrown in there too. So I threw a lot of weird things in this one, but
well, you've got your work cut out for you. Mm-hmm. There's much more sickness and decay.
Yes, that's it.
On the horizon.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get it out of my system now, so when we get to that point, I can write happy songs about getting, you know, plan ahead.
Okay, Joe Casey from Proto Martyr. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's Coward Starve from Proto Martyr's album, The Agent Intellect. Thanks to Joe Casey for coming by the podcast. Thank you to our producers, Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez. You can read our writings about Proto Martyr at nytimes.com/music and tune in to our Spotify playlist to hear Proto Martyr and more. See you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.